This is Brittany Slays from Unleash the Archers, and you're listening to Toilet of Hell.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Greetings, friends. It's your boy Joe Thrashenkill. With me, I am joined by 365 Days of Horror and Brennicide. How's it going, fellas?
Exactly that good.
Wow. We're just firing on all cylinders today.
Yes! Yes! Woo! We're doing it. It's live. We're here. Hey, man. I'm doing awesome, man. How are you guys doing? Have you guys have had as exactly a great week as I have had?
Pretty much.
Yeah, this has been a garbage dick week. Not even a garbage ass week.
Man, always half empty with you, man. Gotta look at the positives.
Okay, so I do have a positive. Like, I had been planning since the tour was announced that I was gonna go see Morbid Angel and Suffocation, and then my stupid friend had to go get married, so like I'm gonna miss the show. But I decided not to be deterred. I am going to go to the wedding, and then I'm going to travel to Houston the next night to see the show there, and just take off work on Monday. So you know, I'm making jam out of whatever the hell you make jam out of.
Yeah, how far is that trip for you?
That's 3 hours, I think.
It's not too bad. What's the furthest you've traveled for a show?
I traveled to San Francisco to see a show.
Wow. I thought you were going to say somewhere else in Texas.
What show?
Texas is the Reason is the name of the band.
So you had to leave Texas to go see Texas is the Reason.
It wasn't a very good show either.
Yeah, like, I can imagine.
I was actually really, really disappointed. I mean, like, I love San Francisco, so I was glad to go visit the city just because I enjoy being there. But the band itself, pretty lackluster, to be honest with you.
So you were an extra sad emo boy.
Yeah, very accurate. It also bums me out that you recognize what that band is.
Oh yeah, I know. I know a thing or two about a thing or two. Do you want to also talk about Jawbreaker while we're at it?
I mean, I love Jawbreaker too. I think the only other band, if they were to reunite and, you know, play one show in San Francisco as this band did, Christy Front Drive, I would absolutely make that trip for them.
That one I don't know.
Yeah, it's same thing, like super shitty sounding emo that, I don't know, I really like them.
But Get Up Kids, Sunny Day Real Estate sort of thing.
Yeah, like Sunny Day Real Estate is pretty similar. Although I saw them once, like on their like reunion tour, and that was also similarly bad. Maybe emo bands shouldn't, you know, reunite. I don't know. Makes sense. Have you ever had the experience of, you know, being really stoked on a show and then just being completely left flaccid by it?
Nothing comes to mind. I mean,
I have.
Oh, go on. Have.
Yeah. If you got nothing, I'll be happy to cut in. I'm sorry. Sure. But, if I went to, see Death to All in, at the Worcester Palladium, and, I was super stoked on the show cause it had a Suffocation opening for them, and it had the Human era, Death guys getting together to do this stuff. Paul Masvidal, the bassist with the really wacky last name, Paul D. John Dario, Johnny O. Gabagool, what's his last name?
Papadopoulos?
Yeah, something like that. And Sean Reinert, of course, on drums. And this was before Sean Reinert and Paul Masvidal came out and their new Cynic came out and Cynic album came out and everything like that. But they were great. But the whole show before that, I don't know who booked it, who was in charge of managing it, but it was just like the shittiest local garage bands opening for these guys. Like one band was just their guitar didn't – like the guitar made no sound. The guy was just playing it through the whole set, and all we heard was bass. And he's just thrashing away, none the wiser. Suffocation was just – the sound guy did not give a shit about how anybody – performed. It just the sound was awful. It was constant feedback. Our ears were bleeding by the end of it, and not in like a good way, in like the worst possible way. And even the sound for Death to All was pretty underwhelming. And it didn't have a huge turnout for the show. It was just such a huge bummer. Not to mention the fact that they had people performing in the downstairs and the upstairs area, which is just two separate areas of this venue. It's a really big venue. They have kind of like a bar place, and they have like a major concert hall place. They had bands like performing in different areas at the same time. So it's like guys who came all the way out to play didn't get anyone watching them because we just suddenly heard a bigger band playing in the other room. So we all left. Yeah,
that's a New England Metal Fest is where that's held, and they do the same thing. They have bands on both stages, and I know they cross over a lot, and I'm sure those bands on the smaller stage probably have to sell tickets too.
Oh yeah, and it's just such a bummer. Like, these really young kids came all the way out from New Jersey. I don't remember what band they were in, but they started setting up, and then all of a sudden we heard Necronomichrist like blaring from the bottom area, and they're a marginally better band. So everybody, just like a stampede of people just left as they were getting set up. I felt so bad, but not bad enough to stay, of course.
Of course.
I don't know. Like, do you play live with your band, Bruno?
I do not. No, we're not currently playing live. We've kind of thought about it, but the other guys who are in the band, they've just kind of been through the local scene in a way that they're really kind of disenfranchised by it, so they don't like anybody involved. They just kind of want to make a sort of anonymous style band that releases music on the internet, which I dig, and that's fine. But I've actually never personally played live at all in my entire life, so it was kind of a bummer to hear that they didn't want to do it. But you know, I understand why they don't, and what the draw is for, you know, music that doesn't have the live scene aspect to it.
Jordan plays an awful lot live with his band, but just from my personal experience in doing, I don't know, I'm going to guess about 100 shows in my life, it's bad and I hate it.
Yeah.
I think you have to temper your expectations, I suppose. That kind of helps me go on.
Go on.
you know you're not going to make money. You know you're not going to be playing in front of a lot of people. You know the people you're going to be playing in front of, maybe half are actually going to like it. And I'm kind of at the point where it's just like, we just play for our own self-enjoyment. Like, we like doing it. And it's cool that three or four weirdos also enjoy it. And then we go home at night. You know, we're almost positively never going to tour. So we're not worried about going to West Virginia and playing a bar and grill on a Tuesday night. We're just heading to the venue that's 15 minutes away. So it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. And I think that's probably one of the big reasons that we don't, is because they've been through that and they told me all about it up and down. And it just doesn't really seem too much up my alley as far as what I'd like to do. Sometimes they talk really big about maybe opening up on like a huge festival in the area or something, where we're like one of the first few bands or something like that, where we get a chance to play in front of a lot more people. But it's just one of those things where we it's just a lot of talk right now. I don't know where it's ever going to go.
I don't know. Sometimes, you know, I can count on like one hand how many just like really, really great shows I ever played. And there really isn't much else like it, you know, when there are at least a few people in a room that are really getting into what you're doing and having a great time. But it was such a rarity that most likely,
right.
Most likely you're going to, I don't know, annoy people into leaving, or play into an empty room, or, you know, just be drunk and forget your lines and fuck up and then be all embarrassed and ashamed. So, you know.
Sign me up.
Yeah, it's a good time, man.
Well, I've actually been to a show where I've seen the band fight on stage.
Please tell me more.
It didn't come to fisticuffs, but this is probably the worst, I guess, set I've ever seen live. It was freshman year in college, and there was some sort of battle of the bands going on, and it was still in the beginning of the school year, and like, I didn't really know anyone. So I'm just like, I'll go, I'll, you know, see if I can meet some people. The group that was putting it on, I ended up becoming the president of later. They just put on concerts and like tried to help out local bands. So it ended up working out for the best. But one of the bands that was playing, they kept messing up. They kept starting songs over again. And you could see the members getting like madder and madder at each other. they'd finish a song and then they'd just start yelling, and the set came to like a crescendo, I guess, or apex, or whatever word you want to use, when the guitarist slash singer tried to do like a power move and stood up on the bass drum and fell down really hard. And the song just pretty much ended. They took their stuff off the stage and went their separate ways. And it was just one of those things where it's like, oh my God, please stop. Please stop fighting.
They won, right?
I don't think so. Oh. The people won. The fans won.
The fans. It's all that matters.
Please stop fighting, Mom and Dad.
But yeah, it was just so awkward. It's just like, just get through the set or leave. Don't like try to do both at the same time.
I saw Battlecross in Vegas open up for Gwar, and this might have been one of the most uniquely bad shows I've ever seen. And it wasn't really their fault, because they came on, they hit the stage, they played, I think, two songs that were like solid, and then the microphone went out, so the singer was just like, you know, yelling into the void, completely eclipsed by everything else. And then the left guitar went out and the right guitar, and then eventually it was just you could only hear bass and drums. And they did that for four songs.
Sick. That sounds like a show in Providence, bass and drums. Yeah. There's at least four or five bands that do that.
One time I was at this really sloppy dive bar called The Waterfront in Holyoke. And I went to a hardcore show with my little brother. He's way into like the local hardcore scene and stuff like that. And it was like a big benefit show, because one of the hardcore schlubs had punched a guy so hard he went to jail because the guy died.
Wow.
So it was a, yeah. There was
okay,
a
wait, wait, wait. Who was the benefit for? The guy who did the punching or the guy who got punched?
The guy who did the punching. The Jesus guy who punched someone Christ. So hard that he killed somebody.
Was this FSU related?
I am not at liberty to say. I don't have any further comment at this time regarding any sort of Florida State University, because that must be who you're talking about, sir.
Yes, of course.
Snitches get stitches, hardcore for life.
Anyway, so 100 Demons played the show and as the closer, and some like tween moshed into their PA and broke it, so they had no vocals for like just about the entire set, and so everybody just had to yell out the lyrics, and the vocalist just did nothing but hype the whole place. That's all they could do. So I've definitely seen that happen, and it's not anything that I'd ever want to happen to a band I was performing in. It looks like such a bummer.
Yeah, I've been to so many hardcore shows, and you know, everyone, you've always got like a crew of dudes in the front who are ready to like, you know, yell along with every lyric. I've never really known any lyrics, so I don't know. I've kind of always wanted to go up there and just like yell into the microphone my own thing.
Oh, you have you guys seen that infamous video of James Hetfield walking around during their live show back in the 90s, and Jason Newsted just freshly joined the band? James Hetfield, he's walking up to fans and he's going, "Sir John!" And he passes the mic off to fans, and fans go, "Seek and destroy!" And then he goes up to James Hetfield and he goes, "Search it!" Puts the microphone up to him while he's playing bass, and Jason Newsted just goes, "Bah!" And then James Hetfield gives him a look like he wants to fire him a lot sooner than he got fired.
Did Newsted leave? I thought he quit. Or did he get fired?
I don't know. It's one of the greatest mysteries of our time. It was like the band pretty much forced him out emotionally or something, because Jason Newsted wanted to do some side project stuff.
And, oh, yeah. Worth it. I've heard them. Yeah. Definitely better idea than making millions of dollars with Metallica.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jason Newsted got all butthurt because James Hetfield said, "No side projects, no side stuff at all. Your life is Metallica. You're going to eat, breathe, and shit Metallica." And then he went and had the gall to go perform a song for the South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut movie. And that's literally what Jason Newsted like focused his rage on, was the fact that James Hetfield had sung this song for Matt Stone and Trey Parker in that movie. Like, that's what ruined the Newsted Metallica.
Do you remember in some kind of monster, the documentary where Lars is going out and he sees Newstead's new band. He's like, man, Newstead's the future. We're the past, man. We got to get our shit together. And it's like, out of every incorrect thing that he says in that movie, that one might stand out the most.
The most, yeah.
How have there not been t-shirts where it's just Newstead is the future?
Newstead is the future. Oh, man.
He had a band for a while called Papa Wheelie. Like Papa Smurf, but Wheelie. Fantastic.
It's shocking that that didn't take off.
Yeah. Newstead, not good. I don't even know what the fuck we were talking about for this part of the episode. Jordan, how about you get us straight?
We were talking about the worst shows we've sat through or bad bands we've seen live.
Well, I got a show that I've sat through quite literally that I can talk about. A couple of years ago, and by couple, I mean probably like seven, eight maybe years ago. I'm just losing track of time. I went to go see an Amon Amarth show back when I was way into that stuff. And another Swedish band by the name of Sonic Syndicate was the opening act for them. I think it was Sonic Syndicate and then this band called The Absence or something. I don't even remember. And then it was Amon Amarth. But just Sonic Syndicate were one of these bands that really just cashed in on that whole guyliner metalcore scene thing that was happening back in 2008, 2009. And so they were pretty much just like a huge Atreyu knockoff, just savagely, shamelessly knocking off what was cool and hip at the time. And they performed at the show and we're just a bunch of Amon Amarth fans, just a bunch of grizzly Hesher dudes who were just watching the show in disbelief. And then eventually at one part of the show, this random Boston jerk, this little guy, I remember, he was everybody sit down, everyone sit down. But he's a kind of nasally guy. He can't get his voice up. And since I was a younger guy, I thought it was a great idea. I was everyone sit down, woo! And we all just drunkenly start getting the whole crowd in the front row there to just sit down for this show. And I got to give the guys credit. They just kept playing like nothing happened. At the end of the show, they called us a bunch of fat Americans and told us to go get some Quiznos and go fuck ourselves.
I mean, that sounds like a good afternoon to me.
Yeah. And then, and I shit you guys not, you can look up a song, Sonic Syndicate, Hellgate, Worcester. And that song exists and it's on one of their major releases. We pissed these guys off so hard and we just mass holed them so savagely that they got so butthurt that they wrote a song about it. Wrote, performed, composed, practiced in a space for months and months to get it right. They made a song for us. It was the most pure trolling that I've ever been involved in.
It's the most masshole thing ever to happen, I think. Philadelphia has booing Santa Claus and throwing batteries at Mets fans. This is Worcester's holy grail of being Worcester.
I think this is Worcester's proudest moment by far, is just sitting down through Sonic Syndicate and just I have to send you guys pictures. They're great.
No, I'm looking at Sonic Syndicate. While you were talking, I Google image search Sonic Syndicate, and I'm just scrolling through right now. This is peak Ed Hardy core.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's, if I could have thought to say that before you did, man, I would have. That's a great descriptor. But I'm saying there's actually pictures of the show. Oh. I have photographs of us sitting down and laughing and giving them a finger. So this was back when That's Not Metal was kind of at its peak. And I wrote an article about it and, this just really proved that they were such small, weak, frail people. Richard Sejunison or whatever the guy's name was, the lead singer at the time, he had wrote an article bashing me for writing my article and saying that my band tours the world and this guy's just jerking off in his basement and all the same old stupid shit people say about bloggers. And I think I wrote one more thing back at him and then he wrote another thing. And then I just remember at the time I felt so good about how my blog was doing and I just so didn't care. I was this guy's a nobody. He's not worth my time. I felt that way. He could have at any point been professional about it and felt that way, but he decided that instead it would be way more important to get his word in or whatever English he could fathom, or I mean, sorry, any English he could put together as his word in. Listen to me, you know, he can't not English day good. So,
fucking
that
Euros.
that was pretty awesome.
Fucking you Euros, broke, man.
You broke someone's brain.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, like, I had heard of That's Not Metal. I'd never heard of Sonic Syndicate. So I'm going to give the basement blogger jerking off the points on that one.
Yeah, as you should.
Yeah. I don't know what this band sounds like. It looks like they've ripped off the Godsmack like logo font tier two. So
it's like hard Euro rock.
It's like if Bleeding Cowboy was available, they would have used it
yeah.
as a font for their band logo.
Yeah, I mean, Bleeding Cowboy didn't really hit its stride until, what, 2008, 2009?
Yeah, I'd say that's about the time that they pushed it to the top of the scene.
You know, that's what I want to do for a future post, is the history of Bleeding Cowboy, because I feel like that'd be a real service to bands. You know, that maybe the entire history of all bad font choices, like Papyrus for Nile and Lamb of God. Surely,
right.
Surely someone uses Comic Sans. Oh yeah, totally. I forgot. In Flames used Comic Sans for Jester Race on the cover.
Did they?
Yeah, yeah.
I have to verify this.
No, so you're like, it's either that one or Horacle, but it's got the Comic Sans on it, man. Yeah, it's I see just... it, man. The Jester Race.
That's not Comic Sans.
Look at the one right next to it, because there were two editions of this. One of them has like your standard Trivium-looking-ass font, and the other one has the Jester
Race. The one on Metal Archives has the Comic Sans, though. Is that... Are we sure that's definitely real?
Yeah, you can pick this up from 20 bucks spin. It has, like, the reissue. It has Comic Sans on the cover of it.
Son of a bitch, there it is.
That has to be someone just completely fucking with them, and it just got through.
Yeah. I'll tell you, though, if you're gonna... It's actually a pretty classy use of Comic Sans. It's not too obvious. it's kind of shaded in there well with the rest of the album.
It's classy Comic Sans.
It's right. It's the, you know, it's the kind you would actually see in a comic.
The champagne of fonts.
The reason we were talking about this even in the first place, about bad bands, is that Jordan and I have kind of been obsessed with this thing for a while, and I think a lot of people are, anybody that comes across it anyway. There's this video on the internet. It's been floating around for forever. I remember I found it on one of those like Carnage DVD compilations of people just like chopping shit together that they found. This was before YouTube existed. Of this band performing. I believe they were from Fort Worth. And it was 1996. They played a show and did an interview. And this video slowly got passed around and passed around. Now, you know, everybody can see it on YouTube. It has millions of views. Have you heard of Complete? Is that... How about the phrase "Hoogie Boogie Land"? Have you ever heard of that?
Hoogie Boogie Land. I don't know, man. I guess I'm out of the loop on this one.
Jordan, when did you first come across Complete?
I first came across them like 2007 in the old MySpace days. Jesse Leach of Killswitch Engage, at the time he was in the band Seamless, had just posted like a bulletin about. It was a YouTube video of someone explaining this band, like how he met them. And it was the entire set that they performed like on public access TV. And they would like play a song and like talk about it and play a song. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I love that it's still on YouTube, that people can find this because they need to see it.
Yeah. And this is fucking incredible. I'm going to play just a little bit of Hoogie Boogie Land to give people an idea of what this is, but because it defies description, it would be free jazz if they knew what they were doing, but they don't. It is just the most free-flowing nonsense thing I've ever heard, and it's really captivating in that regard. The drummer has a huge drum set, yet he only plays one drum at a time, and even then just barely. The guitarist is doing something. It's hard to describe exactly what it is. Their bass player wears one of those giant Dr. Seuss hats, you know, the Cat in the Hat type things.
Ah, yes, the old rave Cat in the Hat types.
Yeah, he's plucking away like at his bass, like he kind of knows what he's doing, but the sounds coming out betray that he has no idea what's going on. And their singer is awesome because he is. You know, I grew up near the DFW area, you know, in the 90s, and he is peak, like, beer-drinking Texas man, you know, just with long curly hair and a mustache, just the way it should be.
He looks like an out-of-work jobber wrestler that would be, like, working the Mississippi Territory in the 80s.
Absolutely. So, let's just do a taste of this.
Hey, Sparky! Hey,
Sparky!
Yeah, man, what's up? Hey, man, you want to do us, the band, and all these people here a favor and take us on a trip to a magical land?
Yeah, sure, man. We need that.
Let's go to Hoogie Boogie.
Hoogie Boogie Land!
Where you gonna go? They didn't hear you in the back!
Hoogie Boogie Land!
In addition to playing the song, they played several others. They were interviewed by the public access hosts, in which they described their big plans for getting a record deal and recording a professional record. It's awfully ambitious for, I mean, obviously what you just heard, what this band is. Here's the fuck, and so, like, you know, this was lost to the sands of time. Somebody found it somewhere. It got passed around and passed around. I saw it on a DVD called Lost and Found Video Night. It's amazing. It got to this weird virality level that this band in 2016 played a show at Union Pool in New York City. Some organizer found these guys, like, collected them so that they could take everybody on another trip to Hoogie Boogie Land.
Wow.
I just can't get over that the band is called Complete, and during the interview they explain they're called Complete because, like, four of the letters of their names form into the word Complete. Like, it just makes no sense, and they're so confident about it. And so, like, yeah, of course, this is what it is.
Yeah, so, I mean, everybody's seen a bad band. Everybody's seen, like, some kids that just aren't very good at their instruments. But this is something else. Like, it's such outsidery weird shit because these guys are so confident in this horrible thing that they're doing.
And there are people there. People are, like, cheering along. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
I saw a band that kind of is like what you're describing. They were called Apocalyptic Youth, and they were from somewhere in New York, I think. And my buddies and I, we took a drive out to Poughkeepsie, New York, which was such a treat, to go see Fintral perform their first ever line of shows in the U.S. This was back when they still had the really big fat guy as the lead singer. I can't remember his name or whatever.
Fintral?
Fintral, okay. Yeah.
So they replaced that guy with the really, really hot guy.
Yeah, exactly. They replaced the least hot guy ever with the most hot guy ever.
Right.
And now he's going to win this contest, by golly. If you guys are listening, you better go and vote unless it's too late. But anyway, yeah, we went and saw Apocalyptic Youth, and it was a bunch of guys wearing, like, luchador masks and just playing whatever the hell they wanted, screaming whatever the hell they wanted into the microphones. And they had a dedicated member who just banged not pans together, but, like, the sort of aluminum foil, like, pans you can get at, like, an overstock store that he just kept banging these aluminum foil pans together, and they just got bent more and more throughout the show. And they, of course, accomplished no level of noise really worth making. And that's who opened for Fintral. That was it. It was just them and then Fintral. So these guys traveled all the way from Finland to go perform and open or have those guys as an opener, and that was really something.
God, music is so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, we should stop it.
We are joined by a very special guest, vocalist of Unleash the Archers, Brittany Slays. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks. How about you?
We're doing well. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
You've got a brand new record that's coming out, and this is a pretty big event. It's a new record on Napalm Records, and also this is now the 10th anniversary of your band?
Yes. Yeah, 10 years.
So, did you ever think from your original, band practices back a decade ago that you would get to the point of this huge professional record that's getting so much attention everywhere?
It's what you hope for. It's kind of what you work towards, but you never actually think it's going to happen. Well, that's not true. I think we did think it was going to happen in the beginning, but just a lot faster. And, you know, you get a lot of smoke blown up your ass when you're good sometimes.
I've never had that problem.
Not that I'm saying that we're good. I'm not trying to, like, we were something kind of new in a small metal scene. And so right from the beginning, people were like, oh my God, you guys are going to get signed. You guys are going to be huge. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. And we were like, yeah, cool. Like, all these people think we're cool. And then, you know, the years go by and it's like, everything sucks. <You know? laughs> The music industry is so much harder than just people enjoying your music. It's a lot of hard work. So, I mean, there was like the beginning when we were like, yes, this is totally going to happen. And then it was like, this is never going to happen. And then it was like, who cares? Let's just have a good time. And then we got signed. And so it was kind of like, yeah, you know, it comes in waves.
I feel this is just my impression, kind of as an outsider looking in, but it seems like power metal in general has an extremely devoted fan base. Is that your take as well?
I think so. Is it power metal that is what sets it apart? I don't know. I do find that. Yeah, maybe that's what it is. We've always had a really amazing fan base and supportive fans over the years that have, you know, helped us to get where we are today. And, you know, I don't really know what it's like as a, you know, straight up death metal band or straight up black metal band, what fans are like, but, just speaking from my personal experience, yeah, we've got some amazing fans, you know, that have been listening to us since our first demo in 2008, and they still come out to our shows. So it's, yeah, it's a, I hope it's like a, you know, UTA for life kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the difference might be that after you release your first professionally recorded album in, like, say, death metal or black metal, your fans would have called you posers.
yeah. Hey, now, you know, you never know.
We're both big, dumb Americans, and I don't know anything about the Vancouver metal scene. Can you tell us what it's like?
It's great. It's very supportive. It's a little cliquey in that there are scenes. There are definitely, you know, there's kind of like the downtown scene and there's the East Van scene. And then like Victoria is, you know, an hour and a half away by ferry. And that has this whole own other scene, even though it's, you know, it's just right across the water. And it's great though. We moved over here in 2010 from Victoria, which is a pretty small town, of course, you know, big fishies over there. And then we were tiny fishies over here. And right away, we made a lot of friends. And, you know, we worked hard to become more known in such a huge city. There's a lot of metal bands here, like a lot. And even though Canada isn't really known for heavy metal, it is everywhere. So, yeah, we had to work really hard to sort of get our name out there. But, I mean, that's one of the great things about heavy metal is that it's not just each to their own, kind of everyone fighting for those same spots. Everyone's supporting one another. We all go to each other's shows and we work hard to make sure that people know that there is a scene here. So it's pretty good. It's a competitive just like anywhere else, but I just feel like it embraced us really when we were total noobs. So, I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for it right here.
And you always can bond over being disappointed by the Canucks season, right?
Yes. Yeah. No. As soon as you never can play shows when they're still in the playoffs, but then as soon as they're gone, it's like sweet Friday nights are for metal.
That's awesome. How did you first, I don't know, find this genre?
Well, I think it was my brother gave me a Megadeth tape when I was like 8 years old. He was always into heavier music as well, but, you know, I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember Columbia House
where
you,
oh would, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So my dad would do that all the time. He'd have like one or two that he'd want. And then the other 9 or 10 that are free or whatever it was, would be my brother and I's choice. So, one time, Megadeth Countdown to Extinction showed up and just kind of changed my life. I don't know how much of a revelation you could have as a sort of unaware 8-year-old, but as much as you could, I definitely had one. I will always remember that moment when I first heard Symphony of Destruction and was kind of like, this is what I'm meant to do, you know? And then, of course, high school happened and I lost my way a little bit, Britney Spears, that kind of thing. and then a friend of mine handed me Best of the Beast when I was like, I think I was 17 or 18. And I was like, what is this? And he's like, it's freaking Maiden. You said you like heavy music and you haven't listened to Maiden? You're nuts. And then it was after that, I was on the path of heavy metal again. And I never looked back. So.
Oh, now I'm going to look forward to a power metal version of Hit Me Baby One More Time.
You know, when Braden was in the band, he used to play that all the time on his acoustic. Whenever we'd be at a party and someone would rip out an acoustic guitar, he'd be on there doing his heavy metal version. But I've never done one.
I hope he took his shirt off first before doing it. That's the appropriate party guitar behavior.
Oh, really? I don't think he did. Maybe. You know, possibly a couple times, probably, yeah.
I mean, I can't fault you for getting into Britney Spears at the time, because I'm thinking that the main metal alternative at that moment was basically Limp Bizkit or like Power Man 5000.
Yeah, no, and I definitely listened to Limp Bizkit. I loved that whatever album it was.
$3 Bill, y'all.
Probably Significant Other. That was the
oh yeah,
the one with the break one stuff.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I still know like every single word to that song. Let's not talk about that. Another direction.
All right, another direction. I always like to ask when we have people on the show, specifically vocalists, when they are actually talented and can sing. When did you first know that you had talent?
I don't think I knew. It was my mother that knew. She was picking me up from daycare one day. I was like 3 or 4 years old or something. And actually, I'm going to Google that. And she was late, as usual, because she was a working mom. And so she was the last one there, and I was the last kid at daycare. And she comes in, and the caretaker lady is just kind of leaning against the wall, like staring at me over in the corner. And my mom goes over and is like, what's going on? And the lady's like, your daughter has been singing this song all day. What the heck is this song? It's like, it's in my head now. And so my mom goes over there and is just listening. And it was the theme song from Empire of the Sun, which we had just watched. It was a movie. I'm not sure if you know it. With Christian Bale when he was very, very young. And it was like the main theme song of it. And I was singing it in perfect pitch as like a 3 or 4 year old or something. 1987. Yeah. So, and my mom was like, holy crap, okay, she can sing. Like, she's got, you know, the musical ability. And my dad is a singer, and he's played bass in bands for a long time, actually. Used to pay the bills. But so that was where we kind of figured it out, and my dad got his musical equipment out of the basement, and I used to rock out on our, like, fireplace mantle with a little SM-87 in my hand. And and then when I was old enough, because you had to be like a certain age to join the community choir, my mom threw me in choir.
That's incredible. So you knew like right from the beginning that you had perfect pitch.
Well, it was like, I could sing back whatever you sang to me. Like I would sing it. I didn't have perfect pitch. Perfect pitch is where, you know, where someone can say, you know, give me a D and you can sing a D. I can't do that, but I could. Anything that you threw at me, I'd be able to sing it back at you perfectly without thinking about it. So that was really what it was. It was kind of like a musical photographic memory where I had heard this song once and I knew it off by heart immediately. So my mom was kind of like, well, that's gotta mean something. And, so just kind of fostered in me from a very young age.
That is so awesome. So there's, you know, obviously that's the first part of the origin story. The next part is the fantasy elements that all are prevalent throughout your music. How did you first get into, I don't know, was it Dungeons and Dragons or Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, you know, I'm not really sure, like, exactly what it was that got me super into fantasy. I think, you know, my dad took me to the movie Willow when it first came out. It was the very first movie that I ever saw in theaters. And I fell in love with that movie. When it eventually came out on VHS, and my dad bought it for me, and it was basically my babysitter for a long time. So, because both my parents worked really late, I'd come home from school and I'd be there by myself for a few hours, and I'd just put on Willow and I would watch it beginning to end, like a million times I've seen that movie. And I think that was kind of the beginning. I read a lot of like historical fiction and fantasy. I think the first fantasy book I ever read, though, was called like The Key of the Keplian, and I remember just being so enamored with that and being like, what? Like, she's going through a portal into another world? How is that possible? Yeah, like, and it was just kind of like the beginning of fantasy for me. So it was probably through movies and books, I would say, at a very, very young age. I'm like huge movie buff, so, and my dad and my brother are as well, so we've always, I mean, I've been watching horror movies since long before I should have been.
Willow, wasn't that Warwick Davis in that film who was also the leprechaun?
Yep.
Yes. He was. Yep.
It's a long and storied career.
I think as a young kid, if I had those two wires crossed, it might pretty mess me up pretty bad.
Yeah, see, but I watched the first Leprechaun, and I don't think I even got through it. I just couldn't do it. It was so bad. He was never tainted for me.
Yeah, you haven't lived until you've seen Leprechaun in the Hood.
Or Back to the Hood, either.
Oh my god. Those exist?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's in space and in the Hood. They're both awesome.
Now you have something totally to watch when you're in the van.
Yeah, totally. I could do Leprechaun in space.
Yeah, so you guys have been touring exhaustively, like, all around the world. How do you stay sane while you're traveling all those distances?
Movies. a lot of times, actually, yeah, I'll just kind of go to my bunk or hide in the van or whatever, and I'll put my headphones in and watch a movie on my laptop. you definitely have to find those moments of me time, as scarce as they may be. Sometimes, like Scott, who's our drummer, and he's also my boyfriend, he can tell when I'm kind of getting to that boiling point, and he'll say, you know, like, why don't we go for a walk, or let's go chill out, or let's go for dinner without the guys tonight, or whatever, you know. And he often sees it before I do, so he kind of helps anchor me. But also, yeah, I just, when I can, I'll take time away for myself, and that's really the only. I mean, I love touring. I love being on the road and playing music every night. And this is, you know, this is why we do it. So there's really not too much to complain about, I would say.
Have you ever found that it's difficult, I mean, working together with your significant other in the band?
Sometimes. I mean, because sometimes, well, I mean, there's never been a point where it's like, it's been a strain on either the relationship or the band by us being together. But it does feel that a lot of times when we are together, it's always about the band or something, you know? So we really have to work hard to not always talk about the band and to give ourselves time for each other, away from that. So that's really the only thing. I mean, I don't think I would have gotten this far without him, to be honest. So if it was just me in a band, I'd probably have given up long before now. Yeah.
From my experience, the hardest thing in the world in making music is finding a dependable drummer. So congrats on finding it on both ends there.
Well, our issue is actually bass players. So we're hoping that this one that we've found now is the one. So
going back to the new album, I know Apex, there's a concept behind it, and I know you've been on YouTube kind of going track by track breakdowns of the songs. You don't have to do it that much for us, but could you just kind of give us a run through about what the album's about?
Yes, so it is a concept album, and it's about this guy who we call the Immortal, and he is cursed to always serve whoever awakens him. So I kind of like created this little backstory for him, which isn't anywhere, but basically, yeah, whoever can find or figure out the incantation that will awaken him will have complete control over him. Otherwise, he just sleeps, you know, for thousands of years. I think maybe in the early days he was kind of living, but after a few hundred years, he might get bored, and constantly being forced to do others' bidding might get a little bit tedious. So in the album, he is awakened by the matriarch, who is our antagonist. And she tasks him with finding her four sons and bringing them back to her so she can kill them in this ritual to achieve immortality. And the matriarch's backstory is that, you know, she's just eternally on this quest for power. And so she has these four sons. You know, there's no king or whatever in the picture because she literally bore these children just so she can kill them one day when the planets are in just the right alignment and achieve immortality. So, yeah, that's pretty much what it's about. We just follow the Immortal when he finds his sons and brings them back to her, and then goes back to his mountain to sleep for a few thousand years.
Do you identify with any particular character, like the Immortal or the Matriarch?
I think they both have little bits of me in them, but they also are just, you know, totally out of left field. I mean, I admire the matriarch's independence and her, I mean, she's very narcissistic, but she's also, you know, driven and ambitious and doesn't let anybody stand in her way. And she certainly doesn't, you know, let anyone tell her otherwise. So, and, you know, there's that. And the Immortal, I guess, his just kind of quiet stoicism. His, I wish that I could handle shitty emotional situations as well as he does, you know? I don't know, maybe.
Were there any concerns with doing a concept album? Like, you know, worried that people might not get it, or kind of what's in your head might not make sense when it's on the record?
Of course, absolutely. I mean, our first one, Demons of the Asteroids, was really, it didn't come across quite as well as I had hoped. And it was more a collection of songs that just happened to have, you know, a little bit of tie between them. But you wouldn't know it if you didn't, like, read my little, on all of our YouTube videos that we put up with just the album cover, like it tells the story of each song. And you really, if you didn't read that, you probably would have no idea that they're all connected. But, that was kind of, you know, my first try at it. And then this one, I really focused on taking a more active voice. So the story is being told by a voice. I always try to be a little bit more abstract in my writing. I don't like to use, you know, me, I, you know, that kind of thing. Like, this is coming from my head or whatever. So I just kind of ignored that, and I was like, no, I need people to be able to hear the voice of the Immortal and the Matriarch, and, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think maybe that might have helped. It also helps that I had it completely mapped out beforehand, and before even a single track was written, I had a story from, you know, track one to track 10 all mapped out, and the boys had that in hand when they started their riffing, so that might have helped too.
The band's videos, like Cleanse the Bloodlines and Tonight We Ride, are very epic feeling without, like, being too goofy or cheesy like a lot of other power metal videos end up being. Would you want to see Apex or maybe a future album turned into, like, a full-fledged movie?
Oh, that'd be sweet, yeah. I have no idea how we would go about doing that, but yeah, no, that'd be cool. I mean, Apex probably lends itself the best to it because it's actually a story. But I think the first priority for me in terms of making it something like that, it would be a graphic novel is kind of where I'm leaning. I'd love to be able to publish a graphic novel. So maybe that will happen.
graphic novel, comic book, something like that, I think would do really well.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not super in the know of those. Is that the same thing? Like, I don't know the difference between a graphic novel and a comic book.
I think they can be kind of interchangeable. Often, I mean, you got the real sticklers that comic books are issue by issue, and graphic novels tend to be like as if they were the omnibi of those issues, or like the volumes, or an actual novel that's written, you know, like chapters. It doesn't have issues or volumes, but I just use them interchangeably because who cares?
Gotcha. Yeah, like the story Mouse is a graphic novel and not a book.
Yes, yes, right.
I know we talked about the movie thing, you know, if that was a possibility. And if you couldn't play yourself, who would you want to play you?
Oh, my goodness. I definitely would not play myself. I'm a horrible actor. I don't know.
Warwick Davis?
Yes. In a bionic woman suit.
I'd watch the shit out of that. That sounds incredible.
Yeah. Warwick, we have an interesting...
it's not another goddamn Leprechaun movie, is it?
Yeah, no, exactly. No, I don't know. I don't know. Like, if... I love Cate Blanchett. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, she's neat.
So, I'm going to step on Jordan's toes a little bit here, because he had informed me of this beforehand, but apparently you guys are... Your record debuted on the Billboard charts. How does that feel? Like, that's definitely the first time your band's been there. What's your reaction to it?
It's pretty cool. I mean, it kind of feels like, you know, like it's legitimizing us, you know what I mean? We still are, but it just feels like, okay, we're not that band jamming in a garage anymore, you know? It's just kind of like a flash in the pan thing. It's like, woo, super cool, awesome. All right, now back to the day in, day out.
What do you think would make you feel like you've made it, that you've accomplished it?
Probably nothing. I don't think there would ever be anything. I mean, even the biggest bands out there that you know are still thinking, what's the next step? What's the next big thing? What do I need to do now? What do we need to accomplish? You know, there's never, I suppose it could be like where, you know, like Metallica, where they just sit back and they don't need to do anything, and their records are selling in the thousands every week. Maybe that might be it.
Yeah, to be fair, those guys probably need some more activity. Otherwise, they just self-sabotage.
Yeah, no, they... I don't know. The new record wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. I'm not going to say anything.
Well, there's always a possibility for an opening slot for them, so I guess be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're the ones that are allowed to be mean, so we'll do it for you.
Does anybody open for Metallica? I guess they do. Yeah, that's right.
Avenged Sevenfold and Volbeat.
Right. Yeah, I always just think of them as like their own entity that just kind of travels around the world and just plays shows wherever they appear.
They did do Antarctica. That wasn't a fever dream, right? They actually did that, right?
Yeah, they did that.
Okay.
Oh my goodness! Just to say they've played every continent. What buttholes?
My reaction was well.
All right, penguins. Are you ready for this one?
I mean, that's
Enter Sandman.
That was a Death Clock episode, right? Or a Metalocalypse, right?
Yeah, I think so. Train.
Yeah. I gotta ask a question. If I were interested in doing power metal right, where would I purchase leather gauntlets?
It depends. I mean, you can go into, like, we have this place downtown called Rock Shop, and they sell them, and it's like a heavy metal attire. And I'm sure most places, if you search around enough, will have that. Or if you search on the internet for gauntlets, there are a lot of online stores that'll do it, like heavy metal sort of attire shops. And then, but what I do is mine are all custom made by a leather worker here in Vancouver. So, yeah, when I need something new, there's a couple here actually. So she's called Hellbent. And then there's a guy down in Seattle that does them. He does more for cosplay, but he'll make some custom leather gauntlets if you want them. And I'm trying to think of the other one. There's another guy here who's actually just recently been signed on by Iced Earth to do their stuff. So
I feel like that's the way to go. You can't just like go into the shop and get like the mass produced gauntlets. You got to get like legit custom fitted stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some pretty cool ones. It's just that you run the risk that everybody else at the show is going to be wearing them. But yeah, the custom ones are where it's at. And plus, you're helping local artisans and leather workers.
Hell yeah, support the trades.
Yeah, you don't want to buy a gauntlet at Walmart.
Yeah. Screw you, Walmart.
Is there Walmart like in Vancouver?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, it's like on the very outskirts of Vancouver. We are condo city here, so there's no room for a Walmart, but yeah, it exists. Ours are not 24 hours though.
That's probably ideal.
I don't know, man. On the road, walking into a Walmart at like 3, 4 in the morning, it's pretty sweet. I mean, it's kind of weird.
The one benefit of Walmart here in the United States is that you can park like indefinitely in the parking lot, so it's great for bands that are on tour. Like basically, you sleep in the Walmart parking lot.
Oh, absolutely! We've done that many times, and then we'd whip out the Coleman in the morning, and we'd fry bacon like on the back of our van, and people going to Walmart would be like, "Oh, bacon!" I guarantee. Having us out there would sell so much bacon for those Walmarts.
That's what I needed to buy.
That's the most Walmart story I think I've ever heard.
No, that is incredible.
But honey, do we have any bacon? Why do you ask? I don't know.
There's a power metal band over there. They.
I think I can smell bacon in the Walmart parking lot.
Oh, that's a side project, Unleash the Bacon.
Yeah. Yes.
So do coworkers and extended family know that you're a badass metal vocalist?
Yeah, well, I work in the family business, so yes.
Is the family business rocking?
Is that an inside joke? No, it's not. it's a horrible, we're in sales, it's boring.
Oh.
But we have a lot of like customers and sales managers and things like that, and I tried not to talk about it, but because my mother is in the business and she turns from boss into mother mode sometimes, and she'll talk about it. And then it's like, oh, really? And then I'm like at work and I have to switch into this like band mode person. And I'm like, this is weird. Most people that I work with know. Yeah.
So your mom is your boss. Are you the employee of the month every month?
No, because my brother is also in the business, so she has to switch back and forth.
So what's next? You've got this big record. People are going apeshit for it. What are you gonna do now?
Well, we're booking tour dates, so we're gonna announce Europe in a couple weeks, and then we tried to get the U.S. in the fall as well, but it's proving difficult. Europe was our first priority, so we got that booked, and then when we went to do the US, it was kind of like, oh, we can't, we're in Europe at that time. Oh, we can't do that, we're in Europe. We can't do that, we're in Europe. So it was like everything just wanted to happen at the exact same time. So I think what we're going to end up doing is hitting the US in the spring. It was kind of like, it was a choice between splitting the US up into maybe like two or three legs, or waiting and doing it all in the spring. So I think we're aiming for that one. And then just hit as many cities as possible. If if all goes as planned. And then, yeah, tour a bunch in the fall and the spring. And then probably get back into the studio in the fall for the next record.
Hell yeah. That's the endless pace. You know, I did see, I think a previous interview that you had done, you were mentioning the amenities in place touring Europe versus the United States, and that it seems like they tend to take care of bands a little bit better. How is your reception in Europe versus in the United States? Is Europe just a better market for your sound, or is it kind of good both ways?
No, I mean, they're both amazing. No matter if we're playing, you know, a venue that can fit 500 or a venue that can fit 50, everyone's stoked, and it's always a really good time. Just because in the U.S., really, that's all we've ever played is, you know, like max 200 people venues. I think that's just really the only reason why we haven't experienced those same amenities is because we just weren't on that level yet. But absolutely, the fans are fantastic in both places and super supportive. And the last Western leg that we did there, sort of down the U.S. West Coast, was very successful. And we had a lot of friends and fans that came out and packed the venues. So, yeah, they're, I mean, we enjoy playing anywhere and everywhere.
I have one very important power metal etiquette question for you.
Okay.
And a lot of power metal bands have woes and yeahs. When is the right time to say yeah, and when is the right time to say whoa?
Oh, God. Oh, I guess it depends on, I would say for me, like personally, it's like notes. So if you want to, like, woeing is easier when it's low or super high. And then if you want to get like a really good mid-range, I would go with a yeah. So like, because it's just those vowels are easier to do, you know what I mean? So like the yeah vowel is not easy to hit a really high note or a really low note on. So you go with woes there. So it's not really like it's just kind of like a musical choice as opposed to a James Hetfield choice all the time.
I've never thought about that. You're right. I can't think of any super low pitch yes.
Yeah.
Do you ever mix it up with maybe a come on or an all right?
Yes, absolutely. When we were doing Time Stand Still in the song Test Your Metal, it's kind of like one of those, you know, silly rock songs, cock rock a little bit. And I was recording vocals with Brayden, who was an ex-member and a very, very good friend of mine. And we literally sat in the studio one day and just did yas and come ons and oohs and, like, you know, like, ooh, yeah, come on, yeah, you know, just like over and over again. And we just picked them and kind of like plunked them in where we thought they fit. So, yeah, I don't know. And also sometimes it feels like there's a moment in that song where it's like, this needs a yeah, you know? So like in Awakening, at the beginning there, I think it's Awakening, isn't it? I throw a yeah at the end of the first verse or chorus or something. But that's just because that song is kind of like that uplifting and yet sort of still dark, but like, hooray, I'm awake, yeah, you know? So I don't know, just depends.
That is awesome. Do you have anything that you would like our listeners to know about? Anything that you would like to, any knowledge you want to share with them right now?
Any knowledge? Wow. impart my wisdom, I suppose you could say. No, I don't know. Follow us on Bands in Town. That's where we announce all of our tour dates. And it's also a pretty cool app because it will notify you when we're coming to town, if you don't check it all the time. And, I don't know, follow us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And we're going to be putting out another video here pretty quick. It's not like a performance video or anything. It's just going to be a playthrough. But so follow us on YouTube if you want to be the first one to see that. that's about it.
Hell yeah. So do all of those things, listeners. And yeah, go see them when they're in a venue near you.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.